If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters. Second half of the program begins right now. Strap yourself in. We're going to try to pry some opinions out of Joe Sheehan, good friend of the program, bright man, baseball thinker. You can read his work at Sports Illustrated, Baseball America, and, of course, the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter, a must-read for you seam heads out there. Joe, brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks is now open. That is right. Eats, drinks, scenic views. They do have, they got the doors open, so it's a great place to go watch some sports if you're getting out. Get their made-from-scratch menu, but limited seating capacity as they are adhering to all the regulations, so have a little patience. They don't have the same kind of seating capacity they had, but get there early, come a little bit later, go at the off hours. It is certainly worth it. Our friends at Twin Peaks open it. Of course, you can go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com, call either location, Independence or Olathe, and get your to-go order as well. The wonderful burgers, the wings, all the great food at Twin Peaks. You can grab it on your way home. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Right now, Joe Sheehan is with us on our Sprint guest line. Joe, how are you, sir?
Not bad. I was listening to you do the promo and thinking how much, when this is all over, I want to sit outside and eat dinner with friends.
Yeah,
sounds so good right now.
I'm with you. Joe, based in New York, obviously the hardest hit location in the country. How is New York doing these days, real quick, before we get into the baseball?
The situation here peaked, I want to say, maybe 6-7 weeks ago. And I kind of can tell by the sirens, the sirens were persistent for a while where I live, and it's gone down. You see the numbers, obviously, the numbers have gone down. But we've also were, once we started distancing, we're pretty aggressive about it. So I think like everywhere else in the country, we're going to be starting to feel our way out of it now and open some things out and see what that does to the spread of the virus. So it's going to be an interesting summer, both here and in the rest of the city. But I'm lucky. Personally, I'm healthy. My daughter's healthy. So, fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, that's what matters. By the way, did I read this right? Listen, I'm so bad with politics, and I know you follow that very closely as well. Anyone who's followed Joe, at Joe_Sheehan, knows that he is not shy about giving his opinions. I've been joking about how we're going to try to get something out of you. Is this right? I saw you retweeted somebody. The director of Homeland Security signed an order making professional athletes essential workers. Is that correct?
Apparently it is. I thought it's maybe I retweeted it yesterday and I thought maybe I got caught in a joke, but this apparently did happen. And I'm trying to figure out. I was talking to a labor lawyer online today, and it doesn't seem like it's going to have too large a practical impact. I was thinking it might change the leverage between the players and the owners, both in this
right.
discussion and in the health discussion. And the labor lawyer I talked to said, it changes. It doesn't really change the leverage all that much, but it does. It puts the leagues and the teams, not just baseball, but the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, in better position to get equipment, PPE tests. Like they won't be ahead of first responders, doctors, what have you. but they'll right. like be next in line behind them before, say, other industries.
It is, listen, it's difficult times all around with very few black and white answers. There are some, and some are still trying to gray those out, even though they're not. But I do, like, do you agree that, like, you know, we could certainly use a pastime right now, right? That we could use sports, that there is a reason to, you know, I know the NBA has said all along, listen, we're not taking tests away from people that really need the tests, right? We're not going to take a whole bunch of them just to constantly be testing us to make sure that we're still okay when there are people that are ill and need to find out what's going on. And that's a very noble way to look at it. But for the American psyche, do we agree that we if we can do it, if we can find a way, that we at least need to try to play sports in America?
6 million people watch two quarterbacks golf on Sunday. So I feel like that alone... I'm less convinced that it's some kind of panacea for the country. I think actually we probably needed it in March and April when there were more places locked down more extensively. I think at one point up to, it was well more than 90% of the country was under stay at home orders. As those orders have been lifted, and as I said earlier, you know, we're kind of stepping out into figuring out what normal life is going to be like, and people are going to be outdoors more likely as not in the summer. I'm less convinced we need that. It doesn't, whatever the reality of the coronavirus on the ground is, it feels like we're coming out of our shell and out of the crisis mode. So I don't know necessarily that I buy into this argument that, you know, baseball's got to come back or the NBA has got to come back to give people something to do. I think that was true in March and isn't really true now. If they can do it successfully, I think it's a good thing. I think people will enjoy watching basketball and football and hockey and baseball. I have concerns about whether it can be done, and I do think there's a downside here where going without it isn't the bad thing. If the NBA says, we can't get this done, we're shutting it down, we'll see you in November with the new season, that's not the worst-case scenario. The worst-case scenario is the NBA or some other, or the MLB, whoever it is, starts up and then has to shut down, because that, to me, would have a greater negative effect than whatever positive balance we're going to get. That's the risk that's going to be there for these leagues. It's not never starting. It's having to shut down.
Why would shutting down? We've already shut down once, and here we all still sit. Why would that be the worst-case scenario?
Because now you've shown you can't do it. Now we can't take this part of our lives back. And then you have to go, okay, well, when can we do it again? If the NBA starts up in Disney World, where they're going to do it, and you know, 14 people, you know, they seem to have said that they're going to tolerate a positive test. Are they going to tolerate two? Are they going to tolerate four on one team? We don't know. They don't know. We're all kind of feeling our way through this. But if you got to shut this down, that's the emotional letdown we're talking about here. Everything got shut down in March, but that was okay. The coronavirus is running rampant. We don't know what to do. Let's do this. If you go through all of these steps and you put in, remember, because there were no protocols in place in March either. We didn't know how to handle it. All of these leagues now are coming back with these incredibly detailed protocols to keep the players safe and keep them, you know, indoors from the virus. If you put in all these protocols and you still can't keep people safe, that to me is a big step backwards.
Yeah, I get it. Because if you go and you shut down, are we then shut down until we have a vaccine? Which, who knows when that will be? We are all optimistic it'll be sooner rather than later. But what if it's 3 years? What if it's 4 years? When do you try to play again? I think they would try to play again at some point. You get it. You get a better handle on it, and you give it another go. But yeah, I mean, it's scary no matter how you go about it, right?
Well, it's going to be a constant battle between. Even I will say, sir, Ed, not even just the vaccine. I saw today Dr. Anthony Fauci, who we went to high school together, 40 years apart. I like bragging about that. Regis pride. Let's say it's not. And he's saying today we can have a vaccine by the end of 2020. But you know, maybe that's generous, and you still got to stick the vaccine in everybody's arm, 330 people in this country. But if we can get the therapeutics, I'm more looking at that. If we can get the treatment of COVID-19 to a point where it's not fatal at all, where it's more like the flu. And the flu obviously can kill people too. But the numbers right now, if somebody you don't really want to have, you don't want to take the risk, even if you're young, relatively healthy, you don't want to do this. If we can get to a point where the fatality rate is down under 0.1%, at that point, yeah, I think you can look and say, let's try to bring the league back. So this is going to be a constant rolling thing. We're talking about the NBA and the NHL. If they don't, if they can't come back, they're going to probably say, okay, 2020 is done. We're going to get ready for our 2021 season. MLB will be the, you know, kind of the next test. Can they get through a season? The NFL will be coming up too. And I, don't get me started on college sports. The NFL will be a test bed. We're going to constantly now have these test cases as to what a league can actually do, pretty much until we either have, you know, sufficient therapeutics or a vaccine. But I don't think we'll have fans in the stands for some time. I do think we will have 20 seasons in the year 2021. But it may be that the winter sports seasons and the 2020 baseball season are due all victims to this.
But before I go any further, by the way, we're talking to Joe Sheehan from Sports Illustrated Baseball America, the Joe Sheehan baseball newsletter. Why don't get you started on colleges?
We're talking about players who are paid, professionals, in these right. leagues that we've spoken about so far in this conversation. Those are amateurs. Those are not getting paid to take the risk. I don't want to get into a fight about whether a scholarship is pay or the cost of it. It's not like paying guys to take that risk.
Right.
I have a real problem. And parallel to that, I have a problem with if you're a school that says, we're going to keep most of our students off campus, but we're bringing the football team in. At that point, I mean, the whole thing is, well, you know, they're student athletes. They're just like the other students. But you're going to bring the students onto a nearly empty campus. The football players onto a nearly empty campus because you make a profit, you make a huge profit off of them. To me, I mean, college sports, the socioeconomics of college sports are problematic to begin with, but if you bring the football players to campus while keeping the regular students home, you just got to give up the game. You can't do that.
Well, and I know where you were going to go with it. I mean, never has there been a group of people if the college, and by the way, don't you love the directive that's given that they can voluntarily come back on the 1st or the 8th or the 15th, these dates that are being thrown around out there, voluntarily. Do you think anything about a college football program is voluntary?
Can you imagine the kid who doesn't show up for that? Voluntary. Unbelievable. I mean, I don't know where you went, Saran. I went to a football factory. And
Where'd you go? I forget where you went.
USC. I went to USC.
Okay, that's
and,
right.
You know, it was just the football players have a different life. And this was mumble years ago. But it's a different life. The football players are separate from the – I mean, they build palaces, you know, these massive study halls and gyms. And I mean, they're separated from the student body, but I don't think you can reasonably say – because remember, the whole college experience is cheerleaders and a bunch of people in the stands. And if you just put the football team out there to play in front of TV cameras at Bryant Denny Stadium with 8,000 alumni in there, I'm sorry. That at that point – look, I know people aren't going to like this word, but it's exploitation.
That's what?
Exploitation.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would agree. Never has there been a group of people more in need of a union, I think, than college football players.
Well, no, I mean, I tried to, and I believe the NLRB basically shot them down.
I know, and I can't figure out why.
I can't either.
I mean, particularly when you're talking about now you give them a stipend and now we're talking about giving them name, image, and likeness. If they're being paid, and you know why they want it to be name, image, and likeness, because they get away from saying, well, we're not paying them, so they can't unionize against us. They can't unionize versus us to negotiate with us because we're not the ones paying them.
Even the phrasing there, giving them name, image, and likeness, as if that's something that Trevor Lawrence – shouldn't already own for himself and be able to monetize. The amateur model is an invention to keep from paying players, to keep from having to players to make workman compensation claims. It dates to the 1950s. It's nonsense. It's always been nonsense. And hopefully by the end of the decade, we won't talk about it anymore. I think people should get paid. I think people should get paid what they're worth. And the college, I love watching college football. Like I say, I went to a college factory. I love college basketball. But there are parts of it that are just absolutely awful. And if, to bring it back, if we literally put these guys on the field while protecting 75, 80, 90% of the student body, man, at that point, you really gotta wonder what these people are doing.
I'm with you. I'm a guy, I too went to a football factory, Syracuse, you know, our great success on the gridiron.
What was the football factory?
We've had pockets of being pretty good. That's it. We snuck in and grabbed our one national championship in 1959. That's what I really care about, is I've got that.
What was that like?
It was tremendous. I mean, I just, wow. What a party we had that day. Yeah, but we got one, right? At least I got one. Yes, it would be nice to have lived through it, but at least we got one. But no, I'm with you in the sense that, you know, I think to me it's the total honesty test. Like, are you an honest person? Like, if you're not conflicted by this, I don't think you're an honest person. I love college football and I love college basketball, but it's not fair, right? I think it's been heard at times when people liken it to slavery. No, it's not slavery. I get the point you're trying to make, to further your point, to draw attention to what you think is an unfair situation. But it's not fair. And you know how it works, and if, like, I'm of the opinion, if I had to lose college football and college basketball and we had to turn to a minor league system or an academy system the way soccer does for our younger players, then I'll live with that, right? If people don't have to get exploited, and I'm with you, I think that's the word. If you're gonna in a pandemic take people out there and tell them that they've got to go play ball to keep their scholarship, you know, but I will say this, it's not slavery, because they can say no and okay, I guess I lose my scholarship and I've got to go to school the way most people do. I mean, it is, I don't want to state it too far. I mean, saying no is real. Like, you want to play college football, right? But you can say no and walk away from playing college football if you don't feel comfortable with the environment they're putting you in.
Right. It's not, I wouldn't use the word slavery. I would say it's exploitation. I would say that the power imbalance, I don't like the socioeconomics of it. You'll hear people say, well, the football team, you know, pays for everybody else's scholarships. I'm not comfortable with football, 18-year-old football players, picture a football team, paying for the golf, the lacrosse, the water polo teams. I'm really uncomfortable with the socioeconomics of that.
Oh, I am too. And to me, there's a simple solution in it. The ones that make money, fine. Fly from Kansas City to Austin, Texas, and play your games. But there is no reason to be flying the golf team to Austin. The Kansas golf team should be playing, you know, Rockhurst High School here in town, or Rockhurst College here in town. And, you know, you can have leagues for those sports that don't drive revenue. Mm-hmm. This perception that, well, it's the Big 12, so we have to play all our sports against Big 12 teams. No, you don't. Just have a football association and have a basketball association, because they generate the revenue and do that. But I think even more, like, I hate to even say that, like, which is what should happen. You know, Fort Hays State and Northwest Missouri State and all our Division II schools, they can play golf against Kansas and against, you know, Kansas State, and put them in a league to where all they do is drive via car and bus and van. You know, you can absolutely do that. That should absolutely be done. I hesitate to even say that, because I think what should happen is, you're right, Trevor Lawrence should be paid. I mean, he's good enough in every other walk of life. If you are the best architect in the world at age 17 and you design the most beautiful buildings, you can get paid. You can do that. I don't, you know, it's just what about what's right and wrong? And instead, everybody comes up with these BS excuses so that they can have what they want. I've always had college football like this. I want it like this. And so I give up my morality and my credibility to come up with bogus reasons as to why, no, this is actually just and fair. And I think it's
nonsense.
Yeah.
And as you point out, I mean, some of these, essentially football television markets driving decisions. So now you have a Big 12 that stretches from Morgantown, West Virginia to Lubbock, Texas. That's nonsense. You've got an ACC with your Syracuse Fighting Orange in there that plays Miami and Florida State. These are not, look, conferences should have a geographic footprint. As you say, if you want to separate football from the non-rev sports, that's great. But non-revenue sports shouldn't spread like Conference USA and the Sun Belt and the America. This is where all the money goes, and it's wasted.
All right, so the Joe Sheehan plan would be what? The prorated, what they've already signed. That's it. You pay the players based on the games they play, and let's play ball. That's how you would go about it, correct?
I think that's the defensible position. And that's, like I say, that's because, I mean, I don't think the players have to take a cut from that. You look at the recent history of Major League Baseball, the fact that they're saying they don't have cash on hand, when you look at the money that the game has brought in over the last 4 or 5 years, it's because the teams are taking that cash and using it in other ways. So they're caught now. And that plan, that works so long as there's not a pandemic. And the idea that the teams that have not really shared these gains in revenue over the last few years are now saying we have to share the losses, I don't think that's a defensible argument. Here's the one part of the owner's case that I think has some strength. There is a risk here that you play the regular season, the coronavirus, there is the presumed second wave, you have to shut things down, and you don't get the playoffs. So you don't get the value of the TV deals. Now, the deal that they came out with yesterday actually sets aside about $200 million of the playoff money so that if we play the division series, you know, here's another $50 million for the playoffs, players, and so on and so forth. I do think you can reasonably come up with a way to protect the players, to protect the league against the possibility of the playoffs not being played. Beyond that, though, I mean, that's the thing where, okay, if the playoffs aren't played, we defer the money. And by the way, how come the teams aren't going to the networks? Like, the teams are going to the players and say, you have to indemnify us against these losses. Why not go to the networks? The networks have billions of dollars. Because you know why? The networks will tell them to go to hell. You know, billionaires don't do that to other billionaires. So, I think that's the one reasonable argument the teams have. And I think you can craft a, you know, whether it's deferred salaries. I mean, people have said that deferred salaries are a possibility here. One of the problems I have with the players moving off of any position they've already taken, which would be the agreement for the pro rata pay. Well, I have two. One is, as I understand it, from a labor law standpoint, if they begin to negotiate on compensation, that opens up the whole deal. The second thing
when you say the whole deal, you mean the whole collective bargaining agreement?
Well, this whole deal, the memorandum of understanding. You basically have said, okay, we're negotiating. That document doesn't exist anymore. That's what I learned today. The players come and say, we're going to negotiate on compensation. That opens up the whole conversation again, which includes that draft settlement. If you remember, the owners now don't have to pay the draftees for 2 years.
Right.
So everything is kind of tied together. But my biggest issue is this. If the players negotiate with the owners based on their current position, which is you have to share the losses, once you open that door, you can't close it again. You've said that the owners can make money hand over fist year after year and work very hard to keep it away from you. But the second that they lose money, you're on the hook for it. And from a collective bargaining agreement, from a strength of a union standpoint, I don't think you can make that step. Because I'll tell you, Serena, I think we're going to be back here in 6 months. Because whatever – I don't see a scenario where baseball is a $10 billion business probably until the middle of the decade. I don't think you're going to have 70 million fans in the stands for maybe the rest of the decade. So the issues with in ballpark revenues are all going to be there next year, if perhaps at a, you know, if they made X 2 years ago in the ballpark and they're going to make zero this year, it's going to be somewhere between zero and X, probably closer to zero next year. So if the players come out and say, you know what, we'll meet you, we'll take deferred salaries without interest, we'll do this. In 6 months, the owners are going to be right back there saying, we need you to do it again.
Yeah. Now, I agree. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And you mentioned the owners. I mean, how about the A's not paying their rent? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's $1.5 million. The guy's worth billions of dollars, and he's not going to pay his rent. Like, that.
Yeah, they
play in taxpayer-paid-for stadiums that they control all the revenue from, and then they're not even going to pay the simple rent that they have. What the hell is that?
And you make the point that I always have been trying to – I've been trying to make this point online for a long time now, which is these guys aren't running your corner grocery. It's not like if we don't sell enough peas this month, I can't put food on my table. All of these guys are rich. They have assets. They have access to capital markets that guys like you and I – well, you might, but guys like me don't have. And you get this like, well, just because they're – they own an asset doesn't mean they, you know, have to cash flow as if these guys are like balancing their checkbook and they're down to their last $37.50 and trying to decide between medication and food. The way people defend these billionaires is completely detached from reality. So, yeah, if you own the Oakland A's, you're not paying the rent is a political move. Maybe it's just that you're going to be a jerk move, but it damn sure isn't you can't pay the rent.
No, and it's like, I love when I hear a lot of these things, it's like, well, you know, they don't have it in cash, right? It's tied up in things. Yes, call your broker and say sell.
Right.
I get it, the market's down, and you never want to sell when it's down. But that's all it takes is for you to say, sell me $500 million worth of whatever stock. That's all you have to do to have the money be liquid. You're like 48 hours away from being liquid.
And I don't. The people who just come out and say, like, they took one business class and they're like lecturing me about, you know, the way rich people don't have access to cash. I mean, come on, you don't get that rich without you only had access to cash. So, and that's why. And that to bring us back to the baseball argument, these guys can all pay the payroll that they've committed to. Every last one of them can. I do think it falls differently in different places. And you look at, I mean, a lot of the owners have over-leveraged themselves, in part to buy the team, in part for projects outside the team. I'm not saying that at an individual level, individual owners aren't going to lose money this year. That's not the argument. The argument is they made money in 19, they made money in 18, they made money in 17, 16, 15. And any good business should have had taken those profits and have them. It's the Boeing argument. You know, Boeing got the tax cut, spent all their money buying back their stock. The pandemic happened, and they didn't have a cushion, so now they're asking us for money, taxpayers for money. No, you just got the tax cut. Where's the money? So I do feel bad for Sherman only because he just bought the team.
Yeah.
I'd imagine he's leveraged. Like, I would have no problem believing that the Royals are going to lose money this year. Do I think John Sherman can't make payroll? No, I just think the Royals are going to lose money this year.
And I believe as of right now, they have announced no furloughs or cuts or anything to their employees. And I do feel for John Sherman. And, yes, I would love to trade places with him financially, all that kind of stuff. Yes, I get it. He's a rich guy. You know, for people that are like, what are you – but I feel sorry for – I mean, I know he and the other investors stepped up, and we very quietly and seamlessly kept baseball in Kansas City, which you and I have talked about. You know, it is not the easiest – you know, team to do that with, and they've never threatened leaving, and that didn't happen. The Glass family found local ownership, and they're here, and so I would like to see them be wildly successful so that people want to own the baseball team here in Kansas City. So I'm with you. I do hear you on that, but I am a little tired of, like, you know, people preaching to me, you know, well, I try to avoid the politics. I know you don't. You barrel into it. But, like, it is amazing to me the corporations in this country are getting handouts when everybody screams about, you know, capitalism. Well, capitalism is not being bailed out. Capitalism is letting all these big corporations that have run just at a razor's edge in the interest of profitability and driving stock prices to benefit their own, you know, golden parachutes and their own stock, you know, options that they've got. Let them go out of business and let healthy companies go buy them. Like, that's capitalism. But we're not actually doing capitalism right now.
No. The argument for billionaires is they take all the risk. Leaving baseball aside, where there's not a whole lot of risk.
Right.
But the argument is you take all the risk. Well, this is what risk looks like. Risk isn't we get all the profits and then, oh, something goes wrong and we come to you for help. And this is where the system, beyond sports, is probably irretrievably broken, because we basically defined risk as no, not for me.
Yeah, it's wild. What do you think of the minor leaguers not getting paid?
I'm not. I don't know. Minor leagues don't have a lot of leverage. Some of them, I don't mind this, but actually, some of the low minor leaguers actually did better on the $400 a week plan than they were doing, which is really kind of disgusting. I would like to see major league. I believe in the reduced to 120 plan. I had hoped it would come with better salaries for minor leagues. I don't think minor leaguers should be making 40, 50 grand a year, because they just individually don't have that kind of economic value. But I also don't think MLB should be going to Congress and getting them to pass laws that says we don't even have to pay you minimum wage. That's disgusting. You're a $10 billion industry. Don't go getting laws written that say you don't have to pay your employees minimum wage. You know, I think we're going to beat up the teams that don't pay their minor leaguers. We're going to beat up the teams that furlough their scouts, and it's just because it feels good to do that. But these are relatively minor moves. It's like people are mad at big things, and we take it out on small things. So we're going to beat up the teams that don't do it the way we would like them to. It is a small amount of money. I think I saw yesterday that if the A's had paid their minor leaguers through the end of the year, it would have cost them, or maybe it was the whole industry, it cost them like $1.6 million. Which, you got to figure you're going to lose $1.6 million in bad publicity. Just write the checks.
Right. Last thing I want to ask you, I thought Mike Matheny made a good point. We had him on last week now.
There's
you know, the days kind of, they kind of, what'd you say?
I said, there's a sentence.
Yeah.
Sorry, I beat up Matheny a lot when he was in.
We were talking to him last week. And I want to say, like, the days kind of bleed together, so it's hard for me to remember what day was when. But, you know, he made, I thought, an interesting point about the only reason that's caused me to step back and say maybe the players should give a little or should consider giving. I heard some very compelling reasons from you as to why they should stand their ground here in this conversation, and I try to take it all in. But Mike Matheny said, listen, $4 billion have left the game. It's going to come out somewhere at some time. You know, let's get back to playing baseball. You know, and that is, I
like,
get,
I
I'm with you.
Is.
Go ahead.
I don't know what that argument is.
Well, his point his point is, listen, whether they take it, it's like a fortune cookie, I like that. His point was, they haven't gotten it. They're going to take it away from you somewhere, somehow. So just get it over with now, and let's get back to some normalcy. That was his point. And I think it is, there is a reality. Like, is it going to come out of Mike, if the players hold their ground, is it going to come out of Mike Trout's contract? No. But if they all lose money, there isn't going to be, like, you're a free agent next year, you're not getting squat. Like, they're not going to pay you until they get back into being in the black. And so
they're not going to pay you even if you – but that's where Matheny's wrong. And I've seen this argument a couple of places where he says, well, you know, let's give them what they want now and get back to normal, as if that means next winter is going to be normal. There are no circumstances under which next winter is going
sure.
to be normal. So get paid now, because next winter, screw it, probably the winter after that, screw it. Every time the players, and they've done this a lot in the last 15 years, every time the players have essentially said, we're going to trust the owners to spend money, they've gotten murderized. I don't know how Mike Matheny can make that statement with a straight face when he was a player in the last 15 years who watched this happen. Every time in baseball history, the owners, the players have just said, we're going to trust the owners to spend money. It hasn't happened. Lucy, football, Charlie Brown.
I hear you and where you're going. So why aren't the players running to revenue sharing, a cap and a floor?
Because they don't want that model. They want a model that says the teams have to compete for talent. And remember, they've approved an enormous amount of revenue sharing. There's still kind of a mindset that baseball has this huge disparity. There's massive amounts of money transferred every year from the Yankees, Dodgers, Cubs, Red Sox, Phillies to the Marlins, Rays, Royals, Padres, Diamondbacks. There's massive amounts of revenue sharing. There's also like what I call it is hidden revenue sharing. National television money is shared completely equally. Do you think the Yankees and Dodgers are getting their fair share of that money relative to the Marlins and the Rays? No, that's revenue sharing too. The playoff money, the Mariners haven't been in the playoffs in 20 years, and they're not going to be there this year, but they've gotten a share of the national television money for the playoffs every single year. So there's a ton of money shared. The arguments about unfairness are from 1997. The baseball economy has changed dramatically, and it's important, whether it's conversations like this or conversations other people are going to have, we've got to start letting people know that this isn't the Wild Wild West anymore, and there's massive amounts of subsidies available to small market teams.
Yeah, no, we've gone down this road a number of times, and where it is. It just seems to me that, like, the owners over the last 2 years – the players are getting a less and less. They seem to have finally, you know, the turn to analytics has given them the ability mm-hmm. to show restraint and not pay players. And, like, the middle class mm-hmm. is gone. So, to me, it seems like now is the time to where they that floor would help them more than the ceiling would hurt them as a collective.
But all the floor ends up doing is pushing money to media. I mean, the NBA has a system where LeBron James gets basically half of his true market value. and the ninth man in the rotation is making $8 million a year, I don't know that that actually is a system you want to get behind, leaving aside the individual max and all the other distorting factors of the NBA. I don't know what if it does you any good to make the Royals spend an additional $70 million a year on 31-year-olds that are going to turn them from a 64-win team to a 72-win team. That's just not the way baseball, because of the way baseball careers are, because of the minor leagues, because of years of control, that's, you just can't build a good baseball team just because you have a salary minimum. That's not going to help anybody. You need to connect outlays to win. We need to make it so that it's more profitable to win than to lose. And baseball doesn't have that right now.
Well, if you had credits and you had limits on it, and it's like, okay, yes, you can go below the floor, but you've then got to spend that back out like the NFL does. I mean, they're always
doing
it.
My head hurts just listening to this. I don't want to have to learn this. I see coverage of the NBA. So people I have enormous respect for. Guys like Zach Lowe at ESPN. I think about Bill Barnwell with the NFL. And the things they have to understand in their sports just absolutely make my head hurt.
Yeah, but just throwing up your hands and saying, oh, it makes my head hurt, doesn't mean it's not the right way to go.
I do think it is. I believe a free market system is better, in part because the competitive balance argument is garbage. You look at the NBA's competitive balance. You look at the NFL's competitive balance. You look at MLB's. I'll take MLB's over any period of time.
I'm going to stop there because Jed's going to lose his mind. Final four for you. Joe Sheehan is with us from SI Baseball America. Four quickies. Here you go. Number one, did you root for the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, yes or no?
No, in fact, I didn't even see the second half because I take my daughter home from a party. I suppose I was rooting for them because, as you know, Renny Snell is one of my best friends, but it was really a passive thing more than anything else. I was very
okay.
Happy for him.
Yeah, but it was Chiefs. But whatever rooting was done was Chiefs, not Niners, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. I want to make sure. Do we have a World Series this year, yes or no?
No.
What do you have a KBO team you're rooting for?
I don't. It just hasn't clicked with me at all. I've seen maybe two or three innings, in part because of the time. I just finally got keeping normal hours. It just doesn't interest me.
Get a team. Get a rooting interest. That's what you got to do. Be a Dinos fan. Come on board. That's my squad. Dinos. They're awesome.
I know it's your four questions. Let me ask you. If baseball comes back, is anybody going to care about the KBO on August 1st?
No, very little. But I will forever be a Dinos fan. I have signed on. I'm on board. I'm going to get gear at some point. Are you binge watching anything to replace sports? Got a show for me?
My friend got me. She really wanted me to watch New Girl, which is the Zooey Deschanel thing. So I five seasons into that. I finally watched the third season of Mizelle, which I'd heard was terrible. It wasn't great, but it's a beautiful show to watch. I started The Sopranos and stopped. I'm always binge watching something Sorkin in the background. I'm on like 53rd rewatch of West Wing. But
okay.
Somebody was telling me I had to watch something after. Dead to Me. I'm supposed to watch Dead to Me. That's a friend of mine told me.
Dead to Me?
That.
Okay. Go watch Ozark.
Cardellini.
Yeah. Have you watched Ozark?
I haven't.
Yeah, go watch Ozark. That's a great one. You heard that one from me. There you go. Joe, you're the man. We will let you go, buddy. Stay healthy, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks, man. Stay safe.
You bet. Joe Sheehan. Love him. Great baseball mind. I'd like to think that you can listen to because he is firmly about the Yankees and big market, and I am totally disagree. And we could go back and forth, and we have on and off the air about, well, wait a minute, you can't be the Yankees if you don't have the Royals to play, and blah, 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 blah. Two guys that disagree but actually can have a civil conversation. It's possible. It's actually possible. We'll take a break. You're in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
All of us owe a tremendous debt to this man's towering intellect.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Yeah. All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. Who was the only player in Major League history to have 2,000 hits, 400 home runs, with a career batting average under 250?
2,000 hits.
400 bombs, under
Brooks
250.
Robinson, he didn't get to 400 homers, did he?
Mm-mm. He was actually under 270, but 267 for Brooksy. Okay. This person's birthday was yesterday. I was so loaded, I didn't get around to it. Or I saw the stat last night and thought that's too good not to use.
Did Dave Kingman have 2,000 hits? Under 250.
This guy had 2,200 hits, 414 homers, and hit 248. He is also the oldest player to win a league home run title. I could use either one of those questions for him.
Did he, did he have an on base around 350 or something? He walked a lot?
He walked a lot. But 361 career on base for a 248 hitter is pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Left handed or right handed?
Left handed.
I thought. Left handed.
Played.
Hang on.
Let me see if I can find his career years.
Yeah, give me the career, because it was rotisserie baseball era of my life.
Played from 69 to 89.
All right, so I missed him in rotisserie.
Yeah, twice led the league in walks.
Boy, I don't want to drag this out too long. God, I really want to know.
He was part of the only first trio. I think it's happened since the first trio of teammates to have 40 homers in the season.
40 home runs. Davey Johnson.
Nope. You got the right team though.
I know. Who was it? Davey Johnson? Was it not Eddie Matthews?
There's one obvious answer of the other two. Hank Aaron hit 40. This
and
guy hit 41.
Williams?
Mm-mm. Left-handed hitting third baseman.
Yeah, I can't remember. Go
ahead. Darrell Evans.
Darrell Evans, yeah. Dewey.
Bill James called him the most underrated player in baseball history.
I'm fine with that, because like back then everyone didn't think he was any good because batting average ruled the day.
Yeah, 361 on base, fourth, almost 800 slug.
I'm sorry,
800 OPS. Well, if he had almost 800 slug, he would have been to a few more All-Star games.
By the way, great Cajun food from Jazz, what we were playing for there. Go to jazzkitchen.com to put your order in for that wonderful Cajun food. You can do it right now, jazzkitchen.com, and get great, great Cajun food from Independence, 39th and State Line, over by the KU Med Center, out at the racetrack at the Legends. Check it out right now. Go to jazzkitchen.com for the wonderful Cajun food. And get you some popcorn shrimp, some voodoo wings, if you would like, some of their great seafood, the U-Peel shrimp, great sandwiches, pastas. It is wonderful. It is Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. By the way, is your next one a baseball one?
Let me see. What is my five? No, it is not.
Okay, so you didn't do a question about Frank Thomas.
I did not.
You know, today's his 52nd birthday.
It is. It's also Jeff Bagwell's birthday.
Yes, it is.
The Monster Stars.
I saw that. I looked up, you know, Frank Thomas was 300, 400, 500. Actually, 300, 400, 550 he was. But 300 batting average, 400 on base, 500 slug.
Mm-hmm.
I looked that up, and, you know, I put in, I don't know, some reasonable, like 5 years worth of minimums in it. Do you know how many guys have 300, 400, 500?
Wow. 10.
23.
Oh, that's way low. 23 is pretty amazing when you consider how many people have played.
You know who the only active guy is? Again, about 5 years. I think I put in something like 10,000 at-bats.
Arenado?
No, he might not have the ABs yet. Because he would certainly seem like he would have to be there. Mike Trout.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, Arenado's only 295, but yeah,
okay,
Trout.
Okay, there it is.
Jeez, how amazing.
Mike Trout. And he's at like 305, I think,
mm-hmm.
Right now. So, like, if the end of his career is some 270s while he's taking that massive paycheck, then he could drop below 300. He wouldn't even be on that list.
419, 581.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, as great as Trout is, he's barely qualifying. That three slash number that Frank Thomas was in. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Pretty impressive career. All right, we'll take a break. React a little bit more to Joe Sheehan. We're a little behind because we went long with Joe. We'll do that next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Yeah, Mo, that team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, wrapping things up here in the 4 o'clock hour. Our thanks to Joe Sheehan. We spent the better part of the hour talking with him.
He's so good.
He is great.
Lucy, football. Opinion. Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
Went to school with the same school as Fauci. How about that?
Yeah.
Name drop.
Yeah. How I guess, you know, just 40 years apart. with Dr. Fauci. But I do think, I mean, you know, I think you can see which side he's on, clearly,
yeah.
Right, with the players. But he had some great perspective on reasons why the players, like, big picture-wise, can't, you know, really shouldn't back up off what they already agreed to, you know. And I'm now, after talking to him, much more pessimistic that baseball's going to get going. I think the players are going to dig in. And I think they should dig in, and I think the owners need to just bite the bullet on this one and then figure out a way in the future. But we could be looking at a strike in the future anyway, so why not have it now?
Deli Fresh, end of the hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, 1979 NBA draft. Magic Johnson went number one to the Lakers. Who went number two to the Bulls? Brought to you by Good Sense.